1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Thank you for joining us. Glad to be here on another beautiful Saturday in Pensacola. Hope you're having a great weekend. We are going to take another hour with the Pop Culture Panel today, and joining me for this week's edition of the Pop Culture Panel, first of all, from the Derek Diamond Experience podcast, please welcome Derek Diamond.
Hey, Julio. Thanks for having me back on your show.
Thanks for being here. I look forward to chatting with you. We always have good conversations, and I'm expecting one today. Also joining me today from Improbable Cause Mystery Theater, Nicole Dixon.
Hi, Julio.
Well, guys, we're going to kind of talk about a bunch of things that have been going on in pop culture for the last week, but we're going to start out talking about really where we started out talking on last week's show, because the news in that regard has changed again over the course of the past week. Last week, with Jeremy Branch and Steve Wise, we talked about it looked like movie theaters were imminent to reopening, and some big movies on the schedule. It looked like everything was going forward. AMC had announced that they were planning to open most of their theaters by the middle of July. We were waiting to hear some specifics about our local theaters, waiting to hear from the employees what they were being told and when they were going to be going back. Well, they haven't heard anything in the last week, and as of late Thursday night, the big release that everybody's been kind of keying around, which is Christopher Nolan's Tenet, was pushed back yet again. It's now opening August 12th rather than July 31st. Now, as of our conversation, Disney's Mulan is still on the schedule for July 24th, I believe the date is, but that's widely expected to move as well. So it's looking like theaters may push back again. I'm going to ask you the same question that I asked Jeremy and Steve to start the conversation. We'll go to Derek first. When are you going to feel safe to go back into a movie theater?
At this point, so the interesting thing with this whole pandemic and the consistent messages, everything's just been flowing in different directions. You know, it seems like when we finally figure out something to do or, you know, open something back up, cases increase, that keeps changing, so on and so forth. But for me personally, it's tough to say, because I know that AMC came out and required people to wear masks when they come into a theater, whenever they do reopen, but whether or not people follow that is a whole other thing. But for me personally, probably not until there's a vaccine developed, because I'm perfectly comfortable, and I love the theater going experience much like you do, but with all these huge gatherings and everything, I try and keep it to a minimum. You know, I still wear a mask whenever I go to a store, go into the office, anything like that. So I personally would wait until a vaccine is developed, which, you know, most likely won't happen until next year at some point, if I had to guess.
So let's say, you know, that's the case, but let's say theaters reopen, at, you know, in the next month or so. There's no movie that's on the horizon that could tempt you back into the theaters before there's a vaccine. I mean, you know, some of the big things that are out on the schedule, you know, Wonder Woman 1984, Black Widow, you know, Top Gun Maverick, nothing that you're like, I can wait. Nothing that would pull you in. There's not a killer app there.
I mean, there's a couple, but this whole thing has really kind of changed my outlook on health. So I'm if I do go to a theater, I'll say this, if someone talks me into going, I will be wearing a mask at all times. But to answer your question, the ones that honestly would probably pull me in out of those you listed would be Top Gun Maverick, just because I love the original growing up, and I think the sequel looks really good. So that might be the one to give me a thing. Okay, well, I'll still wear a mask and everything, but I might go to a theater for that.
Big fan of Oiled Up Volleyball?
Who isn't?
Well, I'll pose the same question to you, Nicole. Are you looking forward to getting back into movie theaters? Is there any hesitation to that, or is there a certain movie that you're very much looking forward to? Where are you at on this?
I'm kind of along the lines of Derek. Being a mom, first of all, it's not often I can get to go out to see a movie anyways, and when I do, it's usually with Freya. It would probably be like Mulan or something like that if I were to go to the theater. I did hear that they're hopeful for a vaccine for fall, which is better than what we were assuming, which would be nice. To me, going out to a movie theater at this point with the way movie theaters are designed and set up, it's along the lines of a theme park. I mean, not quite so bad, but it's like, no, not going to do that. Which probably doesn't make me the best guest for a pop culture show.
No, but that's okay. Not everybody that's going to be listening is a pop culture obsessive, and you need to reflect those opinions as well.
It's really going to get me to come out to a theater anytime soon that's on the horizon. Plus, I would think, and this is just, my two cents, is that what's probably going to end up happening to most of the films coming out in the next year, my guess, would be that they'd end up with a Netflix or Amazon Prime deal where it's like a limited release in theaters, and then they go straight to streaming, which to me makes the most sense for any film that's about to come out.
Well, now you mentioned that, most of the time that you would go to a theater, you would be going to see something family-oriented anyway, and we've seen a lot of the family oriented films already just skip the theaters and just go straight to premium video on demand and then eventually streaming.
Exactly.
So, I mean, we've seen that it's just announced that they're doing that with the new SpongeBob movie, which was scheduled to come out in early August. They've done that with Scoob and, of course, most notoriously with Trolls World Tour, which is the favorite film of Steve Wise and Jeremy Branch, I'd just like to point out. Shout out to last week's show. Sorry. Now, have you taken advantage of any of that? Have you gone, or are you willing to pay, $15, $25 to watch a first run movie at home? Have you done that, or where are you at on that?
I haven't yet, but I'm looking forward to Hamilton streaming on Disney Plus on July 3rd, I believe.
Yeah, and that's a whole other a whole other thing. We'll talk about that in just a moment because that is a big deal. But versus it's easy to say, well, I already have a Disney Plus subscription, or I'll get one for $6 a month, $7 a month, whatever it is. Versus, well, I probably would have taken the kid out to see Scoob in the theater, but instead I'm going to pay $25 to watch it at home.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if it's a movie you really want to see and you don't want to have to wait for it for a few months, I think that that's not unheard of, and it depends. It really depends on the entertainment value of what you want. Sometimes in the comfort of your own home, seeing a film is better. It's certainly not traditional, and you kind of miss the stadium atmosphere of it all or whatever. To be safe and comfortable in your home to be able to see a first-run film, yeah, I'd pay $25.
Derek, have you paid your $25 to watch Trolls World Tour yet?
I have not, unfortunately, but I have heard good things. I think it's something that, we might see more of in the future, even when theaters do open back up, because I'm not opposed to paying a little bit extra money to, just watch a movie like, say, the new James Bond movie, No Time to Die. If that comes out on streaming, I might be more apt to do that instead.
Okay, well, right. We'll talk some more about this. We do have to take a quick break. You're listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
How does was a bastard, orphan, son of a whore and a Scotsman, dropped in the middle of a forgotten spot in the Caribbean by providence, impoverished and squalor. Grow up to be a hero and a scholar. The $10.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. A little bit of the Hamilton original Broadway cast recording, since Nicole Dixon, one of our guests today, was just mentioning this this a moment ago. And of course, our other guest this afternoon, Derek Diamond. Guys, Hamilton coming to Disney Plus in just a couple weeks. I know, Nicole, you mentioned you're excited. Talk a little bit about why you're excited about this.
Oh, my God. Okay. So I went to my sister-in-law's house, I don't know, 2 years ago maybe, and we actually saw like a bootleg version of it on YouTube. That was like, you know, like somebody taped it from the thing, even though they're not supposed to do that. So I've already seen like a preview of what it's supposed to look like. And I'm very, very excited to see an actual well-produced version of it. Hamilton is, you know, I did the same thing with Harry Potter for a long time. When it first came out, I was like, oh, I don't want to like this because everybody likes it, blah, blah, blah. And then I like actually saw, you know, listened to it, and Chris Holloway was like, oh, my God, you're going to hear this. And just fell in love with it. I think that it's really a brilliant musical. And the way... God, I can't remember the dude's name now. Who wrote it?
Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Thank you. I think Lin-Manuel Miranda does an excellent job of, you know, telling the story, but also telling the story brilliantly through music and verse. It's really, really interesting. And my daughter got into it. Like, she loves Hamilton. And, you know, it got her interested in history. She went out and did some research on her own and learned about the Adams family, who my husband's distantly related to, and a bunch of different things. So it was pretty cool.
Now, Derek, are you a musical guy at all? Are you a Broadway guy at all?
So funny enough, I wasn't too big on musicals growing up, but... a couple of years ago, I was introduced to Hamilton through some of my coworkers, and they were telling me about it, and I was like, okay. I didn't really get it, but then I started listening to the soundtrack, and I was like, this sounds really cool. And then I was actually fortunate enough when Hamilton was in Atlanta 2 years ago, I went to see it. It wasn't the original cast, but it was still a really well-done show, and it was my first... a huge stage show that I had ever seen. So it was kind of an eye-opening thing for me. And, you know, just like Nicole, I'm really excited to see the original cast in their roles doing what they do. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, see, now I haven't seen any production of it at all. So I've come to this just from listening to the original cast recording over and over because it's brilliant. I'm a big fan of Lin-Manuel Miranda in general. And interesting, you know, he was supposed to have two movies in theaters this year, one being this and the other being the actual film version of In the Heights. Yeah. Which they're really two very different projects, not just because they're different shows, but this version of Hamilton that we're going to get on Disney Plus on July 3rd is... an actual, just a straight up taping of the original Broadway cast on stage during their run of the show. It's right. You know, it's fully produced, and there's, you know, they did it in a theater with cameras on stage, so it's not like everything's shot. You're not watching like a cell phone video from some guy out in the audience with a stationary camera.
Watch. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's production value to it, but this is a feature film that is really just a recording of the actual onstage Broadway show, which is a little different. You don't see a whole lot of theatrical releases like that versus the film version of In the Heights, which we will get next year, being a fully produced musical film like you would be used to seeing for something
like we saw in the theater.
Yeah, or you know, Little Shop of Horrors, or you know, you name it, any musical that you could think of, Singing in the Rain, whatever. That's not what we're getting with Hamilton. Now, do you think that non-theater audiences are going to get that, Nicole?
I do. I mean, I think that there's a couple different musicals, throughout the last 20 years that have done this. Jesus Christ Superstar, the 2000 version, was a soundstage musical version of the musical, and it was brilliant. It was very, very well produced. I don't know if you saw it.
No, but of course, the previous film version, the original film version, is a fully staged film. Even though it's a rock opera, there was a fully staged film of that before mm-hmm. anything like that.
Yeah.
So that's the first way a lot of people experienced it with Ted Neely.
And then Into the Woods, before the movie came out with Meryl Streep and everything, they had a stage version of the film too. With Mandy Patinkin and
It's not uncommon for these things to be shot, but generally when they do them, they're meant for like a specialized audience, somebody that will go pay like a premium ticket to go see. You see it with a lot of shows. I know the Benedict Cumberbatch Frankenstein was done recently that way, and George Takei's film. I believe it's called Audition, is his Broadway show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You get those a lot where you go, just like they do the Metropolitan Opera, and you can go see the Metropolitan Opera on the big screen if you can't go to that. So those are pretty common, but they're meant for like a specialized audience. It's not often that you see this. I mean, Disney paid a big chunk of money for this, too. They paid $75 million for the rights to run this.
But Hamilton is also unprecedented as far as a musical that's come out. I think probably the other biggest musical that's come out that's been at Hamilton's level is, I would say Les Mis for sure, and possibly Rent, and those are like the other two musicals that I can think of that have come out that have been at Hamilton's level. And both of those had films from them.
True. Derek, do you have an opinion on this? You want to chime in?
Yeah, I mean, I think Hamilton is one of those things, kind of echoing what Nicole was saying. Even people I know who aren't fans of musicals like the music from Hamilton. And they say that they're going to watch, they already have Disney Plus, but they say they are going to watch the Hamilton that's going to be on Disney Plus. So I think it is one of those things that kind of transcends genre, that becomes almost mm-hmm. kind of bigger than what it actually is. So I think it's going to do extremely well. I think quite a few people are going to watch it.
Now, this particular production and really all productions of Hamilton have kind of a little bit of a timely bent to them, despite being something that takes place at, the birth of our country. In that Lin-Manuel Miranda is himself a minority, and he wrote this for a minority cast. All of the mm-hmm. roles of these founding fathers that we're familiar with are played by minority actors, and the only Caucasian actor in the show is the actor playing King George, the King of England, who they're rebelling against.
Right.
What kind of gravity do you think that's going to have to it, given what we're seeing happening around the world right now with the Black Lives Matter movement and the fight for racial justice? Derek, you take that first.
I think it's going to be big. I think timing is everything when it comes to releases like this. And I think the fact that most everyone who's seen Hamilton, I mean, they know what to expect. But I think those who don't, and they just might catch it to see, let's see what this whole Hamilton thing's about. I think people will be surprised because the performances, at least the ones that I saw in person, were still played by minority actors, and they were incredible. So I think it's going to have a big impact.
I believe that's in the contracts of any performance of Hamilton, is that you do have to cast as the original cast did. Not necessarily where you have to have a Hispanic actor playing Alexander Hamilton, but the cast has to be made up of minorities. Similarly, the creators of the production Hairspray recently had to go in and put into their contract that no, you have to cast these roles as the characters are, because they were getting places that wanted to do all white productions of Hairspray. And if you know Hairspray, that really defeats the entire story and purpose of Hairspray.
Yeah.
So Nicole, over to you. What do you think the impact of this is going to be given our current times?
I agree with Derek. I think the impact is going to be significant. I think that being a theater person and you know, having been exposed to that world for as long as I have, I think that people of color for a long time have had an uphill struggle in theater, because traditionally so many roles are traditionally cast, you know, white. And, you know, you had your very specific plays that were designed, if you will, for people of color, Raisin in the Sun, things like that. But they primarily came from either African-American authors or Hispanic authors, and they were written specifically for that genre. So I think that what Hamilton did that was interesting and innovative is they took roles that traditionally and historically were, you know, white people, and they turned it on its head, and they did a fantastic job doing it. You know, I don't think, and I've never agreed with casting for a particular color. I think that anybody can play any role. You know, I did a production of the Christmas show with the Angel. It's a Wonderful Life. I did a production of It's a Wonderful Life where the angel was a woman, which is completely weird and different. And so I think that people need to see theater that challenges them. And I think the good theater should challenge people. And I think Lin-Manuel Miranda did an excellent job of that with Hamilton.
Well, and you mentioned, you know, kind of colorblind casting, which is kind of, I don't know if a trend is the best way to put that, but it is definitely something that has come up in the past, 15 to 20 years, where there is less emphasis on, okay, we're doing a show about Superman, and Superman's traditionally white in the comics and in the movies, but they might cast a black actor as Superman. I know Rodney Watley actually did that here in town when he did It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman. So do you have, some people have issues with that, though, not just in general about that particular character, but about, well, you know, if we're doing a movie that's set in the 40s, would blacks and whites really be mingling in real life? Do you have any thoughts about that, Derek?
I'm kind of on Nicole's side with that whole thing. I think, you know, it's, to me, any actor can play any role. Like, if you play the role well, then you should do it, because really what it's all about is the performance. To me, I don't look at color. I look at performance.
I agree with you very much. We've got a lot more to talk about, but we do have to take another short break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We are spending some time with our pop culture panel. Today on our panel are Derek Diamond and Nicole Dixon. And I want to shift gears. We were talking about Hamilton coming to Disney Plus to talk about some other Disney things that have been in the news this week. In particular, the announcement that the Splash Mountain ride in the Disney theme parks is going to change its theming. Of course, it has been in the past themed with the animated characters from the controversial film Song of the South, which is a film that Disney will not even allow to be shown anywhere really right now. It's it was made in the plot takes place in the Reconstruction era of the South, and the character Uncle Remus, who's the storyteller that kind of the whole story is based around, is kind of treated like the, oh, I'm happy to be working down on the plantation for my former slave masters. So you can see why that's a little controversial. They've now decided, even though Uncle Remus has never been part of the ride, and the ride has really just been based around the folklore characters of Br'er Rabbit and Br'er Fox and Br'er Bear, and using, of course, the classic song Zippity Doodah, they're now going to just jettison that, and they're going to retheme the ride, allegedly to the film that we just heard a song from, The Princess and the Frog, which is interesting because that is also the film, Disney's first black princess is the star of that film. So it's very interesting in particular that they would move from Song of the South to Princess and the Frog. So I know this is a little bit of a controversial topic, and I hate to keep throwing controversial topics at you guys, but it's what's in the news this week. So we'll start with Nicole. What are your thoughts on this?
Oh, wow. I have lots of thoughts on this. First of all, I'm thrilled. And the reason I'm thrilled, though, is because I absolutely love Princess and the Frog. It is my favorite Disney film, period. Which, you know, when people hear me say that, they're like, really? That Princess and your Frog is your favorite? And yeah, it is. I think Dr. Facilier is probably one of the best villains Disney's ever come out with.
Played by recent Pensacon guest Keith David, just for the record.
Yeah, no, it's so... Princess and the Frog to me is so well done across the board. First of all, you know, obviously it celebrates the first black Disney princess, which I think was long overdue. And it takes place in New Orleans, which is close to Pensacola. So there's a lot of local-ish history and culture there that I like, and I really like New Orleans anyways. The music is incredible, and celebrating the jazz era, and so it's such a, and the point of the film is good too, you know, that Tiana, because nowadays people are so what's the word I'm looking for? So invested in making it and you know what you can get and how you can get it and you know, success, and if you're busy then that's a good thing, you know, that being busy equals being successful. And you know, Princess and the Frog talks about those themes, and then it talks about how family and love is more important than that. And you know, and her father didn't want her to just be a success. He wanted her to recognize that there was love in the world, and that, you know, her happiness is more important than her success. And I think that that's a theme as well that needs to be explored in our current modern day society, as well as the fact that, you know, it celebrates that it's an African-American story with an African-American princess and all of those things. So there's a couple of different things in themes in Princess and the Frog that I think resonate with people today. And it's not just that it's the first black Disney princess. So
it's interesting, though, because in talking about this on social media during the week, it's been interesting to me to see how many women in particular have come on to say Tiana is my favorite Disney princess, bar none, especially, you know, this film's not that old. It came out, what, 10 years ago, roughly?
10 years ago, roughly, yeah.
Something like that.
So, you know, I'm hearing from, you know, a lot of adults who are in their 30s and 40s even, that Tiana is their favorite princess. And it's really interesting to hear that as opposed to one that they grew up with. And
well, I, you know, Cinderella used to be my favorite princess, and Tiana trumped her. You know, Tiana is just such a good. She was such a well-made character, and the actress that played her was just phenomenal. You know, there's a lot of heart in Princess and a soul. There's a lot of soul in Princess and the Frog, and that is one of the things that I personally feel Disney misses sometimes. Disney misses soul, and Princess and the Frog had that all over the place.
And the actress, just to give her proper credit, is Anika Noni Rose.
Thank you. Yeah, see, you know all that stuff. But, I mean, she was phenomenal. She did a great job. And yeah, and so Princess and the Frog has a lot of soul. And that's why I like the film.
Is there anything that will be lost to you?
What?
Is there anything that will be lost to you in not having... The Song of the South characters represented on the ride anymore?
I mean, not really, because I don't really know Song of the South. It's not something I grew up with. You know, I've been on the ride, and it's cute, and Zippity Doodah is a fine song and everything like that, but I've never had this great love for that genre or that experience. That said, one of the things that I do think is important and something that we're on a dangerous slope with is just eradicating some things that are important to people and historically relevant. And I'm not talking about like Confederate monuments now or anything like that. I'm talking more about art. And, you know, there was a time in our history that was a very dark time. You know, looking back, it's a dark time. You know, the entire, and artistically is what I'm speaking of, but the entire minstrel culture and things like that are not things that we should be proud of at all. But they're things that did exist. And I think it's important that 50 years from now, 60 years from now, people know that at one point in time, this was an art form, and it was something that people thought, you know, was entertainment, and that it was wrong. And that's the point that I think needs to be addressed, is that this was wrong. But if we eradicate it, we don't know it was wrong, because we don't know it existed.
At the same time, as you mentioned, you know, it's a film that you've never seen, you didn't grow up seeing, and it's a film that really generations have not grown up seeing. From a commercial standpoint, does it make more sense for Disney to have something in their park that people are going to be interested in because they know the character and they know the film and they love it, or something that nobody's really been allowed to see for years anyway?
Right. Well, that's why I think it's smart for them to rebrand The Princess and the Frog, personally.
Yeah. Derek, did you grow up with Song of the South at all?
I did not. I've only seen the movie one time, and it was as an adult. So it's not anything that I have any type of a connection with. But I don't think I could have put it any better than how Nicole put it. It's funny enough, I actually didn't even think of the fact that, you know, she's the first Black Disney princess. So I think that's a cool way to celebrate that movie. And it deserves its own ride anyway, because I think Princess and the Frog, and I actually didn't see it for the first time until recently, but I would say it's still underrated as far as Disney movies go. You know, it looks great. It has great songs. So I think celebrating that movie and what it represents, I think is a great thing for Disney to do.
See, now I have to admit that I did see Song of the South growing up. They actually used to show it on television when I was a kid, which is amusing to me now, given that it's become this completely verboten thing. I agree with a lot of the criticism of the film, but the animated segments are pretty much free of that, and that's what's paid tribute to in the ride. That being said, I actually have not seen Princess and the Frog yet.
My God, Julio, you have to see Princess and the Frog.
Good.
It's really good.
I actually own it on Blu-ray. I just haven't gotten around to watching it yet.
Well, you have to watch it today.
Okay.
Really good.
Show's over. I've got to go watch this now.
It really is. It's one of the best Disney movies, in my opinion.
Derek, give me a little feedback here on the film yourself. I know you said you enjoyed it, but give me a little feedback here.
Well, I was actually going to say also, if I'm not mistaken, I think the original voice actors are coming back to do voice work for the ride, which I think is really cool.
That would make sense. I think Disney has been smart about putting that into contracts ever since, I'm going to say probably Aladdin, because they ran into a situation where they had a falling out with Robin Williams and he wasn't doing anything with them for a while. And I don't think they've made that mistake in a contract since. And I think when you sign to do a major role in a major Disney film, you're signed to that until you're dead or incapable, basically. So so I think that doesn't surprise me. You see a lot. And in fact, we saw it recently in the film Ralph Breaks the Internet. They brought back all of the still living Disney princesses to do the voices of the Disney princesses in that film, including Anika Noni Rose. So you're seeing that, especially now that the princess thing has become this huge thing where it's a big marketing push, and you know they have all kinds of products with all the princesses on them and dolls and you name it. They've been very careful about that.
Yeah, so if I get to ride a ride and hear Keith David, I'm perfectly okay with that.
Yeah, it's always good to hear Keith David's voice. He's got just one of those amazing voices that you always want to hear. Unlike me, but you are going to hear some more of my voice after we take a break. You're listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We are spending our last segment now with the pop culture panel, Nicole Dixon and Derek Diamond joining me today. And guys, we were talking before the break about actors coming back to roles that they're famous for. So I couldn't let this show go by without talking about the news this week that Michael Keaton is in talks to return to play the Batman, and wanted to get your reactions to that. You know, he's older, he's wiser, but is he still Batman? We'll start with Derek.
So I have three simple words: take my money. I'm all in on Michael Keaton being back. I loved the original Tim Burton Batman growing up. I can remember very vividly, actually, watching it at my uncle's house for the first time. And I love his incarnation of Bruce Wayne and Batman, because the thing with the superhero role is that you can very rarely find actors who play the real character and then the hero side of things. So both Bruce Wayne and Batman, you have some that are better Bruce Waynes, but not as good Batman, and vice versa. But to me, I liked Michael Keaton's slightly darker take on Bruce Wayne. Like, you can tell there's a little bit off about him, and I can't wait to talk about it. This could lead into so many cool things. You know, it's rumored that, you know, he's coming back to play his same Batman from that universe, because the Flash movie will deal with the multiverse. But this could lead into so many other things. It could lead into a live action Batman Beyond, which I know a lot of people have been excited for. But what I would love to see, if you have not read The Dark Knight Returns by Frank Miller, it is, to me, top three best graphic novel ever written. And there's also an animated version that you can find on Blu-ray that's really, really good. If he played that version of Batman, I'm all in. See, I'm absolutely all in. I love Michael Keaton, so... Let's go.
See, I don't know about that, because I love Michael Keaton. I'm all in on this as well. And I'm glad you pointed out that he's actually in talks for not a Batman movie, but a Flash movie in which he'd play Batman. And the talks are that if they do this, they may bring him back for several films, and he may be a character that links several films together the way Nick Fury has done in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But I don't know if I see him as the Dark Knight Batman. I think that's such a different... Batman, while I think Michael Keaton can play just about anything, I'm not sure. I guess I kind of always, and maybe he's too old for it now, although maybe that's also kind of the point. I always kind of saw Clint Eastwood as the Dark Knight Batman. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I know Nicole's champing at the bit. So Nicole, let's hear it.
Okay. Well, first of all, when Derek said the thing about his Bruce Wayne was a little off, I have said for years, and anybody who really knows me well that has heard me talk about Batman will know that I've said this. To me, Michael Keaton played Bruce Wayne the best anybody's ever played Bruce Wayne, because Batman is nuts. I mean, when you get right down to it. And Bruce Wayne and Michael Keaton's Bruce Wayne, and Michael Keaton in general as an actor, I think in anything you've ever seen him do, is always a little off. Like, he's not completely there. That played so beautifully. It was such good casting for Bruce Wayne, because Bruce Wayne is always a little distracted. He's got to be. There's no way he's 100% invested in every moment of Bruce Wayne's life, because he's always Batman. And he's always got this other thing going on. And Michael Keaton just plays that. He plays distracted throughout the film as Bruce Wayne. And it's really interesting to see. I think it, and I agree with you and Derek that his Batman is great too. And it's very rare to see somebody who can do both. Michael Keaton did it really, really well. And as an actor, I just think it's fascinating to watch his Bruce Wayne and to see those wheels turn or not turn, I guess.
Well, and you know, that whole distracted thing that you've both mentioned, I think really is best exhibited not in the first Batman, but in Batman Returns, with the whole him not seeing what's in front of him with Selina Kyle until they come to that moment of realization at the dance, where they both realize who the other one is. And speaking of, Michelle Pfeiffer's been talking about wanting to get back to playing Selina Kyle for however many decades it's been since Batman Returns came out. So maybe, if it's possible for Michael Keaton to come back as Batman, is it possible for Selina Kyle to come back?
Dude, that would be amazing. Michelle Pfeiffer. And I enjoyed Halle Berry's performance. I thought she did a great job, but Michelle Pfeiffer.
Nobody enjoyed Halle Berry's performance. That movie. We pretend like that movie doesn't exist. Now, if you want to defend Anne Hathaway, I'm here for it all day long. Anne Hathaway was a great Selina Kyle, but Halle Berry didn't even play Selina Kyle. She played, what was it? Patience, what was the character's last name? Nobody remembers because the movie's that bad.
I've tried to purge that movie from my mind.
Yeah. So the less we say about that, the better. Halle Berry's a fine actress. That's just not a very good movie. We're starting to run a little bit low on time, guys. And before we do run out of time, you guys
I actually have to go, Julio. I hope you're not angry.
No, I'm not angry, but I wanted to give you a chance to plug what you're doing. So can you do that before you go real quick?
Yeah, I can do that. So Improbable Cause Mystery Theater is back performing again, which is exhilarating and terrifying at the same time. We just had a show at the Palms in Dustin. It went real well. We will be at the Renaissance Riverview Hotel in Mobile, Alabama, on July 25th, doing our 1920s themed show, which is called Murder Prohibited. And the Renaissance Riverview Hotel is a beautiful, beautiful venue. And it's a little ways away, but if you wanted to get out and see something, that's something to do on July 25th with my company.
Now, and I just give you a chance to reassure people, I'm sure you're taking proper safety methods and all that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. We are in any audience, straight up in audience interaction we have, where the actors are wearing masks. So the audience is protected. And as far as like perusing the dead body goes, nobody's able to touch the dead body. And I'm protecting my actors and my guests to the best of our ability. We also have hand sanitizer at all of the different stations. Nobody is touching the evidence. They're taking pictures of it. We've had to make quite a few small changes, but that said, it definitely doesn't diminish the entertainment value and the gameplay of the experience.
Well, if I can't touch a dead body, Nicole, I mean, gosh.
I touched the dead body for you. You can take a selfie with the dead body.
Okay, that's fair enough. Well, Nicole Dixon, and to tell people where they can find more about Improbable Cause Mystery Theater, please.
Sure.
Sure. You can find more about Improbable Cause Mystery Theater on Facebook under ICM Theater, or you can check out our website, which really right now just redirects you to our Eventbrite page, which is icmtheater.com. Or you can look for my car tooling around Pensacola that has the giant ICM Theater sticker on the back.
It's true. It's a red Kia Soul. You can't miss it. Nicole Dixon, thank you so much for being a guest. We'll move over to Derek Diamond. Of course, Derek, first of all, let's tell people about the Derek Diamond Experience podcast.
Yeah, so you can check out my show, The Derek Diamond Experience. Every week I interview someone who works in the film and television industry, from directors to actors, producers, so on and so forth. New shows drop every Thursday on all podcasting platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and you can follow me on social media at The Diamond Podcast. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Now, in addition to that, you, of course, have a day job. You work with the Pensacola Blue Wahoos. Tell us a little bit about what the Wahoos have been doing as there's been no baseball, but you've got events going on at the stadium.
Yes. So, as you mentioned, with the state of minor league baseball still uncertain, as of right now, we've been doing all kinds of cool events that we've been getting good attendance for. So every Thursday night at 7 p.m., we do team trivia. So you can come out to the stadium for that. On Fridays, we do bingo at 6:30 p.m. On Saturdays, we're doing movie nights. Actually, tonight we'll be showing Sonic the Hedgehog, which is a movie that I've been praising ad nauseum since it came out in theaters. And then on July 4th, we'll actually be showing The Sandlot. And after that, we'll have post-movie fireworks for 4th of July. And for our July 4th event, we will be giving out masks at the front gate. So those who do not have proper face coverings will have the opportunity to get one. We did the office trivia 2 weeks ago, and we had 83 teams, which was pretty mind-blowing. As host, I was a little bit nervous to see how we were going to get through it, but you know, we've got a great staff who are willing to step in and do whatever is needed to help out. So we did it very successfully, but the trivia nights have been going over extremely well. So we've a lot of good stuff going on at the stadium still.
And you've been doing some trivia hosting of your own on the side, is that correct?
Yes, I recently started hosting trivia around town. I am at Big Top Brewing every Tuesday at 6 p.m. So if you like playing team trivia, come on out and hang out with yours truly.
Well, that's Derek Diamond of the Derek Diamond Experience podcast joining us on the Pop Culture Panel this week. Speaking of podcasts, this show is also now available as a podcast on Mondays. You can find us on Apple, on Stitcher, and on I've forgotten. But if you get podcasts, you can find a way to get the podcast. If you missed any part of it, or you just want to hear it again. We will be back next week with lots more to talk about. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.